Welcome back, as the IFC presents another episode of the Four Archetypes of Destiny. My name is James Malmus. We've got a great episode for you. Today we will dive into another fairy tale, The Girl and the Skull. It's a great discussion, we can't wait for you to hear it. If you enjoy the IFC's The Four Archetypes and want to support, make sure to rate the podcast 5 stars on iTunes and wherever you get your podcast. So without any further ado, Dr. El Samurai, take it away.
Welcome back to another episode of the Four Archetypes, and these are the rare occasions where all four archetypes are represented. Actually not, but all four of us are here today, and we welcome you back. Last week we did Sedna and the Flumera. This week we have another tantalizing tale to bestow upon you, The Girl and the Skull. Dr. Eric, you want to say hi to everybody?
Hello, everybody.
Dr. Lisa, you want to say hello to everybody?
Hello, everybody.
Mr. Witt, would you like to say hello to everybody?
I would very much like to say hello, everybody.
Well, welcome, everybody. It seems like everybody has said hello. And today we go back to our story of Mary Louise von Franz's archetypal symbols in fairy tales. And we're telling another story today, another fairy tale about, remember, we are talking about the heroine, the maiden's quest. So we're talking about the maiden's quest, and the maiden's quest is the individuation journey for the feminine, right? We did the hero's quest, we did the hero's journey, and we did the heroine's journey, and this is the maiden's quest. So this is the process of individuation. What does individuation look like psychologically? For the Jungians, fairy tales tell us about our own personal psychology. So the more you understand the fairy tale, the more you understand how psychology works, right? Because these stories are symbolic of processes that we all go through. So this would happen to be a process that the feminine goes through, or the female goes through. Okay, so at the beginning, this is a story by from the people of the Chukchi. Dr. Eric, you said they're from Siberia, is that right?
Yeah, they're natives to Siberia.
Okay. So, without further ado, let's get into the story, The Girl and the Skull. Dr. Lisa, you want to go?
Sure, be happy to. As we stated, this is a Chukchi tale called The Girl and the Skull. Once there was an old man and his wife with their daughter. There were three in the family. The daughter was unmarried. She had no husband. They had two sleeping rooms. That of the daughter was separate. She slept there all by herself. Her parents slept together in the main room. One day, the young woman went out walking. She found a bear skull lying in the wilderness. She put it into one leg of her breeches and took it home, this human skull. She carried it into her sleeping room. There she concealed it. She made a cap, puckered along the border. With that cap, she covered the skull. Then every evening, as soon as the sleeping rooms had been put in order, the woman set the skull near the rear wall, and she laughed at it. And that bear skull also laughed a little back. "Hmm," her mother said when she heard that. "What may she be laughing at, this one?" "I am laughing only at a cap, newly made and adorned," answered the girl. Thus, she deceived her mother. Every time when she awoke in the morning, she put the skull in the bottom of her bag, lest her parents should find it. One day, when the girl was walking outside, her mother took out the contents of her daughter's bag pillow. She was looking for something, and therefore, she also looked in the bag pillow of her daughter. Suddenly, her hand caught the skull by the mouth, and she took it out. She was startled. "Oh, oh, horror! What has become of our daughter? How very strange. Our unmarried daughter has become a Kele. She has become an abomination, an object of fear. Oh, wonder, what is she now? Not a human being. In truth, she is a Kele. The mother told the father of her discovery. Presently, he said, let us leave. No need of her. You speak to her tomorrow and invite her to a walk outside with you. Just as before, the mother filled her bag pillow and closed it up in the same manner. The girl came back. It grew dark, and they lay down to sleep. Again, that evening, she set the skull before herself and laughed at it. Hi, hi. And the skull answered, how wonderful you are, O woman. Why are you laughing so, being alone, quite alone in your sleeping room? Called out to her parents. No, indeed. I am only laughing at a cap, newly made and adorned. On the next day, the mother said to her daughter, let us go and fetch fuel. They gathered fuel, cut wood, and broke off branches and bushes. Then the mother said, the wooden binding is too short. I will go and get some more. Surely I will be back soon. No, indeed, I will go. No, I'll go. I'll then go and get it. So the mother went home, and when she arrived there, her husband had broken camp and loaded the boat. He loaded the tent on the boat. They were preparing to set off for the opposite shore. They are going to leave their daughter and cast her off. When they had almost finished, the girl could wait no longer, and she went to look. She was moving along a steep riverbank when she saw that boat landed and her father's work finished. Oh, she ran on and rushed to them. Just as she came, they went aboard and her father pushed off. The girl held on to the steering paddle, but the father struck her with the paddle on the wrist, so she let go of the steering paddle. They left her and set her off for the other shore, far away.
The daughter was... Y'all hear about something's going on with...
Yeah, just keep going.
The daughter was left quite alone at the campsite. Even though a house had been there, there was now nothing at all. No house. She began to weep and put that bare skull outside. Then she pushed it with her foot and said, weeping, this one is the cause of it all. What has he done, the bad one? They have left me and they have cast me off. Oh, dear. Then the bare skull began to speak. You make me suffer indeed. Do not push me with your foot. Better let me go and procure a body for myself, only do not push me so. Go make a wood pile, make a fire, and throw me into the flames. Oh, all right, but then I shall be quite alone. At least now I can talk with you. Obey me indeed. You are suffering. Quite vainly we suffer together. I shall procure a body for myself. The young woman made a fire. It blazed up. Then the skull spoke to her again and said, well, now throw me into the fire. Then stay with your head drawn back into the collar of your dress in this manner, and do not look up. Indeed, no matter who may look upon you or what voices you may hear, do not look up. She obeyed. She threw the skull into the fire, then stood with head drawn back and bent down. Thus she remained. The fire blazed up with a big noise for a long time. Then it went out. She remained with her head bent down. Then she began to hear a noise, a clattering of runners. Then also, as if from a herd of reindeers. Loud voices, and a whistling sound. Then a caravan clattered by. Still she continued to sit with her head bent down. The clattering came nearer, and the cries, Wago, Yago. Then a man called out to her from the front. Well there, what are you doing? Oh, she looked up. A large caravan was coming. The herd was quite big. The man, her husband, was standing in front of her, clad in a shirt made of thin furs in the best of skins. They built a camp and put up the tent. He was quite rich in reindeer. Then, in truth, she began to feel quite well. In the beginning of the cold, early in the fall, the parents of the woman saw smoke rising. Come, say, what settlement have we noticed just now? Come, let us go and visit it. They crossed with a boat, her parents, the father and the mother. They came upon their daughter living in a campsite. Oh, sit down in the outer tent. I shall cook some food for you. She prepared for cooking and filled the kettle with meat and fat. While she was cooking, she broke some thigh bones to extract the marrow. When the meal was finished, she gave them the marrow with the bone splinters. Eat this marrow, she said. They ate the marrow, but the thigh bone splinters stuck in their throats and pierced them. Thus she killed them, and they died. Finished. I have killed the wind.
So, killing the wind. Okay, so let's start with the beginning of the story. I think von Franz starts with an interpretation on page 159 for those who are following us in this book. She says the interpretation, I quote, of the beginning of this fairy tale with the skull suitor follows from previous tales with similar beginnings. So this is a story of individuation as to how to integrate the animus, which is the masculine part of the feminine, and what it looks like. And so the animus is represented by the skull. And so for her to be able to integrate it, the more she's able to integrate it, the more she's able to integrate the masculine, the more she is individuated and thus can move into a relationship. So always remember in von Franz, she talks about how we have to individually, psychologically develop before we're able to develop in a relationship. So there is an internal relationship and then there is an external relationship. First, the internal relationship has to be worked through. So this is the internal relationship. Even though it's an outside skull, it's symbolic, it's an internal relationship between her and the skull. The skull is an internal figure, and she has not figured out what the skull represents. For her, the skull is something that is external. It's not internal. Once she understands it to be internal, then she is able to operate in the external. So for all of us, in von Franz's view, is once we understand our internal relationships and how we integrate those internal relationships, then we're able to work through the external relationship. Because who in the end do you end up arguing with? You always end up arguing with is yourself. Did I do the right thing? Did I do the wrong thing? Did I go the right way? Did I go the wrong way? Was this a good meeting? Was this a bad meeting? Do I love this person? Do I not love this person? You're always arguing with the internal self. So if you are not settled, if you are not integrated, if you do not feel that your pieces are aligned, and we are talking about psychic aspects of us. In her case, she's talking about the animus again. And the animus is the internal masculine for the feminine. Now, it's not a male per se, right? It's the aspect of the masculine. So we always kind of restate this because I don't think it's understood. So in Jungian psychology, Jung referred to the internal feminine and the internal masculine. And for Jung, they live on poles. And so if you're male, you have an internal feminine. If you are female, you have an internal masculine. And so these two poles are where we vacillate back and forth from. And somewhere in the middle, somewhere where integration can occur, is usually the point in time where we have quieted the internal dialogue so we can move forward. So we can never move forward without quieting the internal dialogue. What is the internal dialogue? Is the argument between me and me, or between me and my other complexes. But who is me? Me is another complex. It's the ego. So this is a conversation about who I am and what I am and what I want to be and where I want to go. In this case, it's an old story because it's talking about how women were looked as incomplete without the marriage, which without the external bond, somehow that would not be complete. You need the external bond to have the internal bond. So if there's no internal bond, there's no external bond. So there's just some of the ideas that when we talk about Jungian psychology and what von Franz is talking about in this story. So the skull is a representation of the internal. And how does the internal transform? The transformation is always through fire, right? This is a transformation. It's a purification. It's a form of taking one substance and transforming it into another substance. So if any of you are cooks, this is the way we go about cooking. We take a substance like a tomato sauce, and then we add something to it, like meat. And then we add some more to it, like vegetables. And then we add something else to it, like a meat stock. So what we're doing, so what the tomato sauce started as is no longer tomato sauce. It's now a soup, maybe a stew, maybe something else. It depends. So if I added rice to it, and then suddenly you have a completely different dish. So transformation occurs when you take the original element in its original state and you transform it with what? Fire. Right? So even an egg, if you're just frying an egg, it's no longer an egg. Right? It's no longer liquid. It's no longer in a shell. You cracked it, you put it on the fire, and now it's a flat, scrambled egg. Not the same thing. So if you put a scrambled egg next to an egg that has not been cooked, two different things. Fire changes. So that's kind of the concepts that we want to explore with you today. Dr. Eric, you have ideas?
Not at this point. I'll listen a little bit more. This is, I need to hear a little bit more. I'm not sure that I understood what you just said. I'm just not sure I'm grasping the story yet in the full way that you just described.
Well, so for von Franz, the story is about what? It's about individuation. How does this young woman become who she is? How does she internalize the external? And to internalize the external, you have to work out the internal. So for most of us, what von Franz would say is that for the feminine, for the female, the animus is her biggest obstacle to finding who she is. The integration of the animus, the integration of logos, the integration of the aspect of her that is the rational part of how the world moves will help her gain insight on how to have an external relationship with the other.
So her parents leave, so her being by herself now and her finally having the fire to purify her animus. That's what that was about?
Yes. So okay. The only way you can individuate, as Jung says, is to individuate within the collective. You are still, still a singular individual internal process that has to be done within the realm of the external flock or the external group or the larger group per se. Go ahead.
I just wanted to say thank you. I got it now. That was helpful.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead, Whit.
You know, but she's listening to the skull.
Correct.
So the skull is the, you know,
animus. It's the complex. And yeah, the complex the skull is talking needs, back to her.
The skull is asking for a body.
The skull is asking for a body, yeah, because it's disembodied. Because it's outside of her. The skull is asking for a body because it's outside of her. So taken literally, the skull is a demon that requires a body. But if you take it metaphorically, the skull is a part of her that needs to be integrated,
right?
Needs to be part of her body to be able to move forward. Lisa.
Or maybe.
Go ahead, Lisa.
You just made a statement there that I would say for the listeners, let's be careful because you said the skull is a demon. No, the skull is seen by outside people as a demon.
Correct.
Which is the Kele in the story.
Correct.
But it truly is an animus, a type of spirit that is actually should be integrated within the girl. That is seen as is symbolically represented as an external object because it is not integrated with her yet.
Beautiful.
And very so well I just said. Want to make that distinction.
No, very and that well is,
the skull is not it is a part of the girl that should be part of the girl. And it's being, and it's compelling her, calling to her, you know, quietly interacting with her by showing itself to her. She finds it. She doesn't know what it is. It is with her. She's aware of it. She interacts with it. And over time, it compels her to make a fire. It's a very symbolic story, very literal symbolic story and how it's laid out. But in terms of the integration, yeah, you could see that at the end of the story, it doesn't sound like the skull is actually human. It doesn't sound like he's there. Like he never found a body. He didn't actually literally need another external body. He needed her body in a way for him to become a part of her. And that's how I saw it, but I don't know.
Yeah. So I love that. That's beautiful. So let's take another look at it. So modern day, a young adolescent female who is trying to find her way in the world. She finds an outside object. Call it what you may. A book, a story, a figure, a skull. She finds a skull and she starts to have a dialogue with it. This is an internal dialogue. This is an outer object, but it's an inanimate object. It doesn't really do anything except it facilitates the conversation for her. Now the parents walk in, modern day. What the hell? Why are you talking to a plastic skull? Or why are you talking to the skull? What is this conversation about? Are you okay? Well, I'm trying to facilitate a conversation with self. And so I am using the skull as a piece that connects me to that piece of me that I've lost, that I don't have in my hands, that I need to communicate with, that I need to hold on to. Once I am able to transform that conversation, then the conversation becomes internalized. Then the skull is no longer external. I don't need the skull to talk to. Kids do this all the time, right? We call it a transitional object, teddy bear. We hold on to the teddy bear. We talk to the teddy bear. How's the teddy bear? external. It's actually an internal relationship.
Invisible friends.
Visible friends is another one. So all of these are in the same category. What we are trying to do is help ourselves transform. Right? We are transforming into something different. And what I needed that was outside of me to talk to, now I have that voice inside of me, that invisible friend talks to me. And that's how we integrate. This, Jung would say, is the individuation process. It's how we individuate. It's how our internal arguments no longer are arguments. They have one voice. So the person arguing against it, the person for it, and the person just standing and perceiving it are all one. So to individuate within the collective, this is how we do it. We've always talked to, by the way, we've always talked to symbols. We've all talked to animated objects all the time. Bricks, stones, statues, graves, earth.
House plants.
We're always having the conversation. The conversation is always about what? About how do we grasp it, transform it, make it ours, and be able to move forward. It's always about forward momentum. When the argument is too loud and too hurtful and too angry, we can't move on. Why? Because we're arguing. Okay, how do you transform that? You transform it through fire. Okay, why fire? We also transform things through water. If you dip something into the water, you christen it. It's a way of transforming it.
So what's a transformation?
The transformation is that the skull is there to help her become one, so she is able to move into the world as an adult, which means to have more normalized relationships with other adults.
Yeah.
That's the ultimate transformation.
She gets rid of her parents. The skull needs a manifestation, an embodiment. So the skull is there.
So the parents are also complexes, right?
The actualization in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she gets, by the end of the story, she is, you know, literally gotten rid of her parents, but symbolically she has grown and perhaps outgrown those complexes or that.
So the mother and father complex are when we are younger and we require constant reassurance of, are we okay? Are we okay? Are we doing the right thing? Is this the smart thing to do? Am I doing this for the right reasons? We are always using the mother and father complex to help us grow and develop into the world. When we start to use the masculine function or the masculine complex, when we start trying to integrate that piece of us, that's a more grown-up voice. So I no longer need my internal mother and father to help me through the world. Now I need the pieces of me that help me become an adult in the world. Because I've done what? I've ridden myself of my parents. I've ridden myself, which means I am able to take them in and no longer need them as an external source. So what happens when the child grows up? They go to college. Why do they go to college? Because they need to individuate. It's the first process of individuating. How do I individuate? Well, I get away from my parents. I live with other people. I share a room, right? Yeah. I am in a different state or a different country.
Yeah, living on your own.
So what a refreshing perspective on this story to see the reading of the end where Her parents choked on the marrow. It's not a story of vengeance.
No.
Revenge is actually, if you retell the whole story and say everyone and everything is symbolically a complex of one girl.
Yes.
And retell this whole story with that perspective, that just brings this whole story to a whole new light.
Yes.
It really does. So, it's well said, Lisa, Dr. Lisa, and the explanations that Dr. Lahab gave and the questions asked really help bring that out. And it turns this into not just another gruesome fairy tale, that some of them are, but this one is just, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's really a beautiful story when understood for what it really is.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the any story that's transformational, where the person transforms from a fear-based existence to I am just going to stay here and work this out. And this basically means I'm stuck. I don't move. I'm not going anywhere. This is just eating me up. But to progress with the fire is to transform the whole thing. So when the human species developed fire, suddenly it elevated cuisine to a different level. Cuisine was nasty. Be honest. Yeah. Raw foods, nasty. I mean, think about it. They didn't like really wash them or like chop them up. They didn't have like utensils. They just like stuffed them in their mouths. Nasty. Okay. So now imagine a little fire, a little transformation. Suddenly that meat is like tasty. Oh, that's interesting. Oh, it has smells. Oh, it has a color. Oh, it's brown. Oh, look at that. Oh, it's so chewy. Oh. So now I move something to something else. Something that had flesh on it, but now it doesn't look like flesh anymore. This is cooked. This is succulent. This is tasty. It's very different understanding of the world. And for us to individuate, it's always excruciating and it's always painful. It's always painful because what? We have to give up our old beliefs. We have to give up the old system that used to run us. What is the old system that used to run us? Well, mom and dad, you know, they know what they're doing. We don't really know what we're doing. We're trying to learn. And hopefully one day it was. Old system, new system. We change. And every time we change, we transform. And every time we transform, it's like peeling a layer of skin back. We don't look the same. I was like, oh, you know, you don't sound the same. Or your ideas have changed, or this is all about individuation. Change is a constant throughout our existence because we change, right? We age. But all through the process, it's a constant conversation about who am I? Where am I going? What am I doing? Where do I want to go? Who do I want to be with? Who do I want to love? What is love? So we're always having the conversation. It's when we can't stop having the conversation and can't move on. Because we're always questioning. And usually those are failed relationships. Why? Because the internal relationship is unresolved.
Failed relationships with self. It's not an external person, external people. We're talking about a failed relationship within oneself.
Yeah, and therefore the external relationship doesn't work.
And oftentimes, as seen in Marie Louise von Franz's storylines, that's when the heroine in the story lives in eternal purgatory or death. It just doesn't end up for them.
Yeah, she's trapped.
Yeah.
And what happens with our story? So at the end of our story, what happens?
One interesting observation is that she begins as an individual who feels alone, which is why she needs to interact with something. And at the end of the story, she is surrounded by people Not to say being alone is a terrible thing, but having no choice, having very little choices, whereas more, there's more options at the end. There's, I think there's, I see it that way. But I just love the idea of, I'd invite the readers or listeners to go back to this podcast and start again and listen to the story, visualizing everybody as a complex of the same person, all the images and people. And I'm going to use that from now on. Like, what a great concept.
I am too, Lisa. I am too.
Whit, you have any thoughts?
No, I think, with that, people should go develop something tasty in the kitchen,
Well, yeah, always, we always go towards the scary part, the literal part, and we miss the metaphoric, the symbolic, because the metaphoric and symbolic is actually what is true transformation. Once we're able to put it in a symbol, we're able to digest it with our brain. We can't really digest it in our brain if it's not a symbol. So if it's just a thought or an idea, it's not digestible. But as a symbol, it stays. That's why we have logos for everything. Symbols stay. Symbols are acknowledged. Symbols are seen. Symbols are spoken about. Okay. Right. Well, thank you, everyone, for staying up with us and listening to another fairy tale from Mary Louise von Franz's Archetypal Symbols and Fairy Tales. And we are in Volume 3. Volume 8 was just released, by the way, for those who are interested and want to read ahead. But we are on Volume 3, The Maiden's Quest. And we will be back next week. The four archetypes will be back. And as we always end our podcast with the words from Jamp, I am not afraid.
I am not afraid.
Whitman is afraid.
Dr. Eric.
So say we all. I am not
so
afraid.
Say we all. Whitman.
I am not afraid.
We are not afraid, and we are the four archetypes, and we will be back next week. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you for tuning into The Girl in the Skull. We hope you enjoyed hearing from Dr. Al Samurai, Dr. Eric Tomlinson, Dr. Lisa Hong, and Whitman Davis. You can also find us on the IFC's YouTube. Make sure to check out the JAMP Institute for Training's Magician's Call podcast as well. The IFC is a not-for-profit institution. We do not have any paid advertising for our podcast. We do accept donations. All donations and contributions are tax-deductible. You can find more info at theinstituteforconflict.com.